TalkZone.com.
A streak of fire, a breath of flame, eluding all who reach and clutch. A gray ghost thrown into the game that rival hands may never touch. A rubber-bounding, blasting soul whose destination is the goal, Red Grange of Illinois by Grantland Rice. For many of us, names like Butkus, Nitschke, and Grange are more than mere players on a field. They represent the history, the glory, and the spirit of a university that has contributed so much to this country and has made our lives rich beyond anything we may offer in return. If Virginia belongs to Jefferson, then surely the land-grant legislation proposed and signed by Abraham Lincoln in 1865 gave birth to his home state university in 1867 and countless other institutions for the people, of the people, and by the people. We are the living legacy of Father Abraham's great institution. Sons and daughters of Illinois, our renaissance, in the words of Ron Gunther, is now. From Chicago, the greatest sports city in America, we are proud to bring you Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G.
Hello, Grand Illini fans.
Dun, 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 dun.
It's going to be a great 2 hours from the last 5 minutes I've spent with Mr. G here warming up for the show. Maybe you could help us out. 888-463-6748. Mr. G's going to hold up a T-shirt now to the camera. We're going to be giving some away to lucky callers. Email us at talkingillini@yahoo.com. Mark Tupper's going to join us.
Or call in at 888-463-6748. It never hurts to say it twice.
You're so busy thinking of all the negative things you're going to say,
you know,
and holding up the T-shirt. Can I tell everyone who's on the show?
No, because who are we playing? Our Lady of the Babbling Brook tomorrow? I mean, give me a break. Go ahead, tell them.
Mark Tupper's going to join us at 4:20, Brad Sturdy at 5:05. Maybe a special guest at 5:30, Mr. G, or
live and on site.
On an airplane?
No, on site at an NCAA 2A site where they're going to have an actual game with actual teams that have made the NCAA tournament.
You're so negative. You know, you're looking for a positive. One of the positives is that everybody doesn't have to hear me sing, because if we would have made the tournament, I would have tried to one-up you with a parody to Barry Manilow's Miracle. So once Sunday at 6 rolled around, the sweat beads stopped pouring out of my pores, and I didn't have to embark on that project. I actually thought, you know, all day long, Sunday, everyone but Greg Anthony that I saw said we were still going to be in. Now, I didn't have high hopes. I was, you know, just kind of watching and all that. But when all these people kept saying we're still going to make it, I thought, huh, you know, they got to know something. But the reason we didn't was because there were a few slots taken by teams that won their conference tournament that weren't otherwise getting in.
Right, and it came down to us and Utah State and UTEP. I was shocked that Florida received the 9 seed that they did, or was it 9 or 10 seed? I thought Florida, you know, was a mediocre team. I didn't think their resume was as good as ours.
No, but there were a couple others, like Mississippi State maybe, that had as good or better a gripe than we did. But, you know, we knew all along that it would be a flip of the coin, and it didn't go our way. And we only have ourselves, the squad, the coaching staff, only have themselves to put, if blame is the right word.
So if you're Virginia Tech and you hear the arguments from Guerrero, who is the UCLA athletic director and the head of the selection committee, talk about head-to-head matchups and league play, and then you're Virginia Tech and you beat Wake Forest head-to-head and you have a better record in the conference than Wake Forest does, and Wake Forest goes and you sit home, and you're thinking to yourself, what kind of world am I living in? Is this guy giving me crazy pills, or does he actually believe the shit that he's saying?
Well, no, he did a bad job in explaining himself, unlike guys from previous years. I mean, you know, talking about the the non-conference schedule and the RPI and everything. You know, he contradicted himself in a lot of ways. And, you know, I got to agree with Bob Knight on some of this stuff that, you know, there should be more basketball people on the committee. Number one. Number two, you know, he talked about games in November and December and how they should or shouldn't count or be evaluated in March, and had some validity to some of the things he was saying in terms of, you know, if you beat a team in November and they end up, you know, not being good, it doesn't hold that much weight. On the contrary, you know, everyone's made a stink about starting last year. I believe they said, oh, we used to look at the last 10 games to see who was playing good, who has momentum, but we're not going to do that anymore. And yet a lot of things people were saying about the Illini was, well, they lost 6 out of their last 8. But if you look at it, 6 out of those 8 teams or 7 out of 8 were like top 10, 12 teams.
Well, no, all but Michigan were tournament teams.
Yeah.
In terms of our losses, those 6 losses. Having said that, Boz, is there a single one of our 14 losses that if it was reversed to a victory, it would inevitably have put us in the tournament?
Well, absolutely. You'd have to say the Minnesota game. I think
No. I'm saying that all 14 of those losses, if we get to 20 wins and we eliminate a bad loss or have another good win. In fact, if we had beaten Utah, we would have eliminated 2 bad losses because we would have played Oklahoma State in the finals of the Las Vegas tournament. By the way, did you know that the tip-in that Utah won on came late?
Yeah, I did know that. I read that again this week, and I remembered reading it like at the time a day or so later, but they didn't have, the tournament was so small that they didn't have like review cameras.
Real cameras.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that every one of those 14 losses, if you reversed one of those 14 losses, we're at 20 wins. We either eliminate a bad loss or 2 bad losses, or we create a good win for ourselves. We're in the tournament. Hands down. The Minnesota game is the most obvious of all because it not only put us at 11-7 in the conference, but the head-to-head matchup would have not done us in as it appeared.
But, you know, but there were also games, you know, it's like this every year. I mean, there's games also that we just kind of squeaked out that maybe we didn't deserve winning, like Indiana or the Northwestern home game or Clemson or whatever.
I mean, good teams are going to win some games that they're not supposed
right.
to win.
The bottom line
is... We lost too many games that we weren't supposed to lose.
Right. The bottom line is, I mean, and everyone said it on TV, this team is good enough, it is a tournament team, there just weren't enough openings the way they have it. That's
you know what?
All.
I don't want to be the worst tournament team in the worst tournament year. If we're going to fail, let's fail miserably.
Well, there's no draft choices you're going to get for failing miserably.
Why fail in a meeting? Well, at least it shakes up the program. If you just muddle along and you're the 64th team and that's what you aspire to and making the tournament allows people to keep their jobs and feel relatively secure. And I'm not saying that we should fire Weber. I'm saying it shakes him out of his doldrums. It gives them a sense of urgency about going into next season, and it lays it on the line, and it says that we failed in our mission this year. In fact, I will give Bruce credit for something. We
mark this down.
No,
408.
I've not been a Weber basher.
I'm teasing you, Mr. G.
We as a team failed miserably. Weber took responsibility. He took it like a man. He didn't whine over being the last team out. He didn't say that it was somebody else's fault. He took responsibility. He said this was on the players and the coaches. It was our fault. We did not succeed. I respect him for that.
Good. He did say a couple goofy sounding things, though, that always seem to happen, which kind of bother me, like about, you know, the reference to the expansion and it will help coaches not lose jobs and stuff like that.
I don't care about that.
You know,
I don't care. I don't care that it protects coaches' jobs. I don't want to expand the field. If you want to expand the field, this is how I would expand it. I would expand it to 68 teams, and I would take the 8 last at-large qualifiers and have them play in for 4 12 seats. So take the eight last qualifiers in the field, teams 61 through 68, have two games on a Tuesday night, two games on Wednesday night, and now you don't have teams like, you know.
So the winners on Wednesday are going to have to turn around and play on Friday.
So you schedule it that way. And now think about the teams. Think about those last eight teams in. Those are going to be name brands. Those are going to be brands that people are going to watch.
Not necessarily.
If they're at-large teams, they will be.
But like this year, in my mind, this year, they would be the four teams from the mid-low majors that won their conference during the year, but didn't win the tournament. There were, and thus, they became two conferences.
Who were the last four at-larges in the tournament?
Well, I don't know if you could say that. I don't have the pairings and the rankings in front of me. But what I'm saying is this, I think the committee.
Pause. Think, just listen to what you're saying.
I'm trying to make a point. You're missing it. You're saying, so you think like the last four teams are, if it was us and Florida and big name teams like that.
No, but Florida wasn't the last four teams in.
But what I'm telling you, they're going to be teams like
Utah State
and UTEP and two others.
But UTEP and Utah State were an anomaly this year. Typically, it's big schools. It'll be Virginia Tech versus somebody. It'll be Illinois versus somebody. It'll be Mississippi State versus somebody.
The committee made it a point this year, I think, by just looking at the results, by honoring teams from the mid or low majors who won their conference and didn't win the tournament. For example, Houston beat UTEP. Now, there's a valid argument.
UTEP was a top 25 team.
Well, but if you look at all of those stats, people look at the RPI, the strength of schedule, how many wins versus top 50 and all that, there's an argument that maybe they shouldn't be there. But because the year before the same thing happened to Creighton, they left Creighton out and all hell broke loose. This year, last year, I believe there were four one-bid conferences, or the small conferences, and that's doubled this year. There's like four or six more teams in representing like the second team from small conferences.
So even if you had UTEP playing Illinois or Virginia Tech, it would be an entertaining game. It would draw a much larger TV audience than the 64th and 65th team playing.
I agree with you there.
From some stupid conference that no one cares about.
If you want to join in, if you care, call 888-463-6748.
Because this is about money. It really is about money. So if it's about money, take those 61 through 68, the last eight at-large teams. You're going to get at least six big names out of it. And you know what? You'll have a television audience.
We got Mark Tupper coming up in about 5-10 minutes or so. You know, I'm hoping, you know, getting back to what you complimented Coach Weber on, you know, taking the heat, taking the blame, whatever. You know, I'm hoping, and we'll ask Tupps this if he feels the same way, if anybody asks the question, that a lot has been and was learned this year that hopefully they will use moving forward and stick with and use consistently to, you know, make this the solid, consistent tourney program that we expect and we're looking for. You know, one thing that baffles me is, you know, prior to the tournament, Weber was quoted as saying, well, Monday we went back and I started practicing and coaching like the way I wanted to, instead of what, I don't know. But, so they had a real hard practice Monday and took it like Tuesday, had another hard practice Wednesday, took it like Thursday, and then came out against Wisconsin. And the first thing I noticed Friday afternoon against Wisconsin was that, you know, we were picking up their offense, you know, right as they crossed center court. And we were putting pressure on and giving them a hard time allowing them to get into their offense, which in turn helped, you know, Davis especially stop Lure from getting the ball, which, you know, 5 days earlier he totally faced him. And I'm wondering why, you know, why don't we don't play like this all year long, every possession?
Because you can't get kids up day in and day out, and that's the problem.
Well, on game day, you should be able to.
These kids don't get motivated. Bruce was unable, and I would say the biggest problem I have with Bruce is I don't think he has a high EQ. By EQ, I mean emotional intelligence. I don't think that he truly understands how to reach these kids, how to bond with these kids, how to communicate with these kids in a way that gets maximum effort out of them. You're going to get kids who come to Illinois who won't need that, who won't need to be coddled, who won't need to be coached up. You'll have strong players on team like D and Darren. D and Darren didn't need a coach. You could have rolled out the ball, and they just would have played, and they would have won because that's what they knew how to do. But on a team like this, you needed counseling. You needed cajoling. You needed somebody to motivate Mike Davis to be the player he could have been. You needed somebody to get Dimitri McCamey to play defense. You needed somebody to get Tisdale to stay in the weight room and understand that he could make some money playing professional basketball either overseas or in America and that he needs to give it his best shot. And apparently, we didn't communicate well enough with our players or motivate them well enough, and I fault the EQ skill and of our coaches for not doing that.
Well, you know, I mean, you could fault the EQ skill of the coaches, but, you know, when are you going to put some more responsibility on the shoulder of the players? I mean, like you said, D and Darren didn't need coaching. And these kids at this level, when you accept a scholarship to play Big Ten or any, you know, Big 12, ACC, Big East ball or any kind of ball, you know, that's a, you know, an honor, not a given.
All right,
and
all right. You can reach us at 888-463-6748 or email us at talkingalina@yahoo.com. We'll be back in a moment with Mark Tepper. We'll see you.
You find the car you want at RizzoCars.com.
It's true. You will find the car you want at RizzaCars.com. Over 6,000 new and used cars, trucks, and vans available online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's so fast and so easy. RizzaCars.com is your one-stop auto purchase resource site. Build a new vehicle. Compare up to 5 vehicles at once. Access new vehicle reviews. Take a new car video test drive. RizzaCars.com also offers easy-to-qualify online financing, which helps to make your purchase simple and fast. Shop 13 new car franchises, including Ford, Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, Lincoln, Mercury, Acura, Porsche, Kia, Hummer, and Saab. So if you're tired and frustrated of driving from dealer to dealer, just remember,
you buy the car you want at RizzoCars.com.
Hey, Illini fans. Looking to win in the game of real estate? There's never been a better time to buy a new home. Interest rates are low, there are plenty of homes to choose from, and ultimately real estate is a great investment. Greg Fisher of Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage is experienced, professional, and dedicated. As your realtor, Greg can help you find the perfect new home. Contact Greg today at 847-681-4173 or learn more at gregshouses.com. Buy or sell with the man who knows his X's and O's. Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage is owned and operated by NRT LLC.
Step back in time when going out for dinner meant something really special. Step into Wildfire, a steak and chop house with the aura of a 1940s dinner club. Private and semi-private rooms offer a variety of options for any social or business event. Order from our supper club menu served family style. Try our horseradish crusted filet mignon or Wildfire's delicious cedar plank salmon. Dine at any of our 8 Wildfire restaurant locations. Visit us on the web at wildfirerestaurant.com to find the location nearest you.
One small step for
Internet Talk Radio.
One giant leap.
Planet Earth, this is TalkZone.com. Now, back to Talking Illini on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's Boz and Mr. G.
Boz and Mr. G back, Talking Illini. Give us a shout at 888-463-6748 or email at talkingillini@yahoo.com. We got a couple T-shirts to give away. And right now we want to welcome in our friend from the Decatur Herald and Review, Mark Tupper. Top sunny and warm down there, like up here?
Like 62 maybe.
Did you go hit a bucket of balls yet, or?
No, I have not done that. Actually, the driving range that I would go to is really soggy, and they were not letting people out because they can't clean the balls up because it's just the balls disappear. So I got to wait a little bit.
I heard the new sleeve of balls they're selling has one ball with Bruce's face on it, one with Mike Davis, and one with Dominic Kellers. Any truth to that?
Oh, man. Well, no, but, you know, I think Illini fans should be ready to get a sleeve of those Stony Brook balls and try to knock them into orbit here tomorrow night.
Tops, who were the last four at-large teams in the tourney?
The last four to get in?
Yeah.
The last four to get in were, let's see, I got to jog my memory because I've actually put the NCAA tournament out of my head since I don't have to follow.
You and me both.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is so true. Utah State, UTEP, I think were two. And
was Minnesota one of the last four?
Minnesota might have been. Where were they? An 11 seed? Yeah, 11 seed. That's possible. I know that those first two are right. And Minnesota might have been one, too. And, you know, you can kind of sit there and scratch your head over the it's funny because I agree with what Bruce said, which was, look, we're not in any position to be complaining much about this. This is our fault. But it is always curious to know what exactly was the criteria in those final handful of teams, because I don't think I understand it exactly when I look at, yes, Illinois's got some bad losses. I get that. But Illinois's got some good wins too. And I look at some of the other teams that got in and I don't see good wins on them. I don't even see where they tried to get good wins.
Well, and the other thing I've always questioned, Tup, is that, you know, they played a lot of ball games that they didn't win. There's no such thing really as a good loss, but if you're even an independent fan watching the two Purdue games or the Gonzaga game, you're saying, you know, that's a heck of a college basketball game, and that team certainly is one of, you know, the top 65 teams. So to be penalized, you know, I don't know, I think you should get a little credit for those kind of games, as well as being penalized for a Utah-Bradley loss in November where you're playing three kids everywhere. Everyone else has basically never played before.
Well, and if you want one even more recent than that, I mean, how about one that the selection committee might have seen as a group? How about the Ohio State double overtime game, which is a quality loss? And the other part of that equation that I do not think that they factor in anything that happens in the Big Ten championship game, unless it's an either or. If they win, they get a one seed, and if they lose, they get a two seed. You know, that kind of thing I believe could happen. But Minnesota, that was not a quality loss by the Gophers to Ohio State in that championship game, and I do not think they were at all penalized for it. And I'm not suggesting that Illinois should have gone in against ahead of Minnesota necessarily. That one loss at home to the Gophers in late February really is a killer.
Right. I think what ended up happening, we mentioned the first segment, simply is that, you know, again, there were a couple conference in-season winners in the small conferences that didn't win the championship and allowed a few teams like Houston and Utah State to get in, and there weren't enough openings.
Okay. By the way, is it possible that Missouri and Florida at number 10 seeds were one of the four last at-large bids?
I don't think that's true with Missouri. I think Florida was closer to the bottom of the list than were the Tigers. But I don't know.
And Georgia Tech was a 10. Well, I don't understand Wake Forest. Wake Forest had some quality wins, as did we. But Wake Forest wasn't particularly good in conference and lost head-to-head to Virginia Tech. If I were Virginia Tech, I'd be really upset about Wake Forest getting in over them.
Yeah, a little similar to the Illinois-Minnesota thing.
Right, but they used reverse logic on that one.
Yes, exactly, exactly. I'm with you.
You know, let's look ahead now. You know, I feel because of the makeup of this team that, you know, playing in the NIT and hopefully winning several games and having another week or two of practice.
Wait,
and
before
playing.
We go ahead, I want to test out my theory on Tufts, and okay. I don't want to leave the NCAA. Tufts. So we have these four teams here. Maybe Florida was the number four of those teams. Florida, Utah State, UTEP, and Minnesota, and then the four first teams that didn't get in. Probably Illinois, Virginia Tech, Mississippi State, and who would be the fourth?
Maybe Arizona State.
I don't think Arizona State, because I think the Pac-10 was not.
Yeah,
so good.
They were, but they did rise. I don't know.
Rhode Island. What people were talking about?
Maybe somebody like that. I said, what if you took the last four at-large teams, and the last four who didn't get in, and made those eight play for the number 12 seed. And you played those games on Tuesday and Wednesday. Now you've got big name schools. You've got real television ratings. If you want to expand the tournament, that'd be a fun way to expand it, and it would generate a lot of revenue. You'd have two games on Tuesday night. They would play Thursday, and two games on Wednesday night. They would play on Friday.
I'm against the expansion thing, but I have no problem with an expansion that involves the play-in games, because it doesn't really fool with the configuration of the bracket. I think 64 teams is the right amount when you really get down to it. I think a lot of people won't watch those games, but could if they wanted to, and they would be much better games than what they're throwing out there tonight as a play-in game. There's no doubt about that. So if you wanted to do that, I would have no problem playing in for one of those seeds earlier in the week. But I think the whole idea of a 96-team thing is crazy.
No, but if you had Florida playing Va-Tech and Illinois playing a UTEP, and those are the 12 seeds now. We were just locking them into the 12 seeds. I think that'd be kind of interesting.
And those games would get some viewership.
Yeah, I think so too, because you'd have at least one big name school in each of those four games.
Yes, I've got no problem with that.
Okay.
I like that.
Just wanted to run that by you.
After you.
Okay, well, you guys can bring that to the committee when the tournament's
done. We will.
And if the committee adopts it, by the way, Tufts, you'll say you heard it here first.
I will. I will write that. I will say that and feel honored to have heard it.
Mr. G is a savant.
Tubbs, Mr. G has thrown out a term that I'm not familiar with, and I'm hoping you are, but if you're not, he'll explain it to you. But he questions the coaching staff's
EQ
in dealing, with the kids' ability, inability.
And the media, by the way. It's not just the kids. It's how they deal with the media and the kids.
There have been so much ups and downs with a handful of players and attitude and getting them to play and not getting them to play. Has this been, an aberration of a year, or is this something that's really, maybe a festering problem that needs to get resolved moving forward?
Well, I think it's pretty complicated, and I'm not trying to make it more so than it is. And by EQ, you mean what?
Emotional intelligence quotient.
Intelligent quotient. Okay. I think there's a number of things at play here, and some of them have to do with the configuration of these particular players. I think in the case of the two big men, I think in the case of Mike Tisdale and Mike Davis, you have two guys who have a really fragile layer of confidence. They have, when they arrived, unlike someone like D. Brown, who had great confidence in his ability to succeed, both of these guys arrived, in my opinion, with a certain amount of doubt about, and part of it is because of their fit. They're playing positions that require some physical strength, and they arrived with none. And so right away you are in a position where I'm going to get my butt kicked every day by these guys because they are so much stronger than I am. And so from that deficit, they've battled to make that up, erase that doubt, and replace it with some confidence. I think they have replaced it with some confidence, but they are not confident players. I think if things don't go well, they begin to question themselves early and often, and all the coaching in the world it can't quite make up for that. I think that's a problem. I think another problem is Dimitri McKamey, who I give a lot of credit to. At the end of last season, I did not like who he was as a player. I thought he was sluggish. I thought he was overweight. I thought he was slow. I thought he didn't try as hard as he could. He just hadn't put in the effort. And I think that was an awakening And for whatever reasons, he went in and he worked and he made himself into a much, much better player. But the thing he did not change and hasn't been able to change is he is not a much better leader. He's not a, and these players on this team look to him, and he's not a guy who talks. He's not a guy who has an expressive face. He's not a guy who can go to a freshman and boost them up. He does his thing. He does it well. But those other things are missing, and it's a real void on the floor. And then you have, and maybe this is your EQ thing, Bruce is real old school. Look at the T-shirts, the motivational T-shirts. Those are right out of the 60s, you know, magic level. Kids roll their eyes at that stuff, and they're like, whatever, you know. And that, you know, Bruce gets it, but I don't think that it really connects with the kids. And I think Bruce has a disconnect from players, and this particularly is McCamey, who would need to be convinced to be a leader. You know, in Bruce's mind, this is the greatest opportunity a young guy could ever have to play college basketball. Every day should be kill yourself in practice and be a great teammate and a great leader on the floor. And it makes perfect sense from his perspective. It makes perfect sense from my perspective, too. But not every kid is that way. And I think he's had a hard time connecting, particularly with Dimitri, and thus a lot of their, you know, their conflicts with one another or whatever, as they try to sort through that. And so as you move forward, you know, will Davis's and Tisdale's confidence go up? I would say yes. But will they get to where ideally you would like them? I don't think they'll ever be there. Will McCamey become a better leader? Maybe a little bit. I think he might be even become a better player, assuming he's back.
Yeah,
but I don't know if he's
going
to be a better leader.
Yeah, is he coming back?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think that's, he's a real hard kid to figure. He's quiet. He doesn't share anything. He's introspective. He parrots what Bruce wants him to say, which at least is better than, you know, being an, you know, a jerk. He's not that. He says the same words. He clearly uses the same terminology Bruce uses. If Bruce says, we had a father-son moment, you know, when they had that little incident over by the bench, when you asked Dimitri about it, he said, well, you know, like father, like son. Well, Bruce has told him, somebody's told him,
right,
you know, what the lexicon's going to be, and he repeats that. So you really don't ever know what he really thinks.
What about media relations?
With the players?
No, I'm talking about the coaching staff. Do you think they display a high EQ relative to dealing with the media?
Well, I think Bruce is what he is. He's a guy that speaks from the heart, shoots from the hip, holds nothing back or almost nothing back.
And that's not always the best strategy. I respect him because he's honest.
It may not be the best strategy, but that's what you're going to always have with
Bruce. So, you know, Boz's uncle is Tom Bosley from Happy Days. Did you know that, Tups?
Did not.
So in Happy Days parlance, would Bruce be Richie or Potsy?
Wow, I was now. Don't tell your uncle this, but I was not much of a Happy Days viewer.
I'm okay with Richie, Potsy, and you know, maybe we got the wrong guy.
Well, I mean, I think Bruce is just going to always be pretty honest about what he thinks, and I don't think he has much of a filter.
You use the term disconnect, and you know today's day, I believe, is different from the 18 years way back when Bruce was at Purdue. And is this disconnect always going to be there? Can he change a little, or does he have to just go out and find the right kid that who is going to, you know, fit into his ability to connect, but maybe have less skills on the court? Or, you know, where are we going with this?
I mean, I think that's a good question. I think Bruce has probably thought about that a lot. I think he is trying to find more middle ground. I think what I see in this next wave of freshmen coming, you know, the freshmen that were there this year, and then with the, you know, hopefully with the group after that, that you're going to see a little different kind of kid. We know you're going to see a higher rated player, and I think that's going to translate into a higher starting point of confidence as compared to what I told you my thoughts are about Tisdale and Mike Davis. I think that's an advantage. And, you know, but the disappointing thing about not getting in the tournament this year is you know, I wanted to see them take another step forward and really increase the size of that carrot that's dangling out there for this next group that comes in, the Richmond group.
And ratchet their confidence as well. Because, you don't have that opportunity to do that now. And that's one of the true shames about not making the tournament, is that there's nothing to build on in this tournament. If they snuck in and won a couple games, it would really be a building block for next year.
I agree. I think there's... I'm not a fan of the NIT. I've said all along, look, this is a booby prize. It's not even a good booby prize. But once you're in, you're in. Now, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to just go over there and lay a big egg, or do you want to try to make something out of it? I think you're better off to try to make something out of it, if nothing else, to see if you can duplicate whatever it was they did in Indianapolis. That was a team that looked like it had some urgency, did it not? It looked like it really had something to play for. That is what you want to see every game out. I realize there's probably going to be a few games where you're just not going to, it's not going to happen. But for the most part, you want to be able to rely on that. As a fan, you want to be able to count on seeing that kind of emotion and intensity that they played with over there. And that would have to start tomorrow at Stony Brook. And I will tell you what, if they come out still pouting about the NCAA, they'll get slapped right in the face at Stony Brook. That would be embarrassing.
Yeah. Did you give the coaching staff and the players a lot of grief over how the overtime, first overtime, last possession, and the last possession in regulation were handled?
I did not, and I'll tell you why. Because the play to end overtime, that was the McKinney to Davis pass. Am I right? That was the same play they ran to beat Indiana.
That was regulation.
That was regulation. Okay, excuse me. That was the same play that they ran to beat Indiana, except Ohio State did a better job. In retrospect, McKinney should have pulled up and shot it. But if you're in his position and you see the defense completely abandon Mike Davis, can you say for certain you would not have tried to do what he tried to do? He needed another half second, and then Davis could have caught it and dunked it. But Mike Davis knew that he knew what the time situation was. His clock was working pretty good, and that's why he let the ball just pop out of his hands, because he had to get it up on the rim, and it didn't work. On the other play, I thought they ran a pretty good play, but Tyler Griffin needed to shoot the ball.
Right.
The one more pass was, no, there was no time for that. And Tyler Griffin's clock was not working very well. He needed to shoot it, and you know what? He deserved to shoot it, because he was shooting the ball about as confidently as anybody.
Well, I'm not sure. From my standpoint, I don't know if that was the play. I think it became the play because McKamey was double and triple teamed, that, you know, they were looking for him to probably get the shot off. But I agree with you. Once Griffey got it, I was hoping he would shoot it. And I think the fact that he didn't is kind of a microcosm to some degree of what's going on over the year in developing. And if he would have been in the games more throughout the year and been involved, maybe he would have had the confidence to take that shot.
That's possible, and my feeling about Griffey all season was he's opportunity away from being a really good player, and maybe one of the worst things to happen in that Gonzaga game was that Dominique Keller
played well,
and he did well, and he's the reason Illinois, you know, was able to make a game out of that thing, no doubt about that. But as well as he played, I found myself cringing almost every time he got back out on the floor. I just, offensively, I did not want to see the ball in his hands. I did not want to see him shoot it.
Terrible rebounder. He was a stiff on defense.
Yes, exactly. And so, I think that game probably ended up costing Griffey some playing time, because I think it kind of head faked people into thinking, okay, you know, he's a senior guy. He's stronger physically. We got to maybe give him a little more chance. Well, I wish that they hadn't, because I think Griffey was,
far superior.
Yes.
So a couple of weeks ago, we had Kendall Gill on the show, and Kendall was saying that when he played, and the Fab, the Flying Illini played, they used to get in fights in practice all the time. I bet you dollars to donuts that these kids never scuffle in practice, or rarely do. And what I'd like to see Tyler Griffey do is the first scrimmage of next year, I'd like to see him plant an elbow in Mike Davis's chest and tell Mike Davis, you know what, I am bigger and stronger, and I want it more than you do. And if you want this job, you're going to have to take it from me, because I know that I'm every bit as good as you, and I'm tougher than you.
I'll vote for that mindset every single time. And and if Griffey's the guy that wants to do that, more power to him. I think that as you move forward here, another guy that I would like to see demonstrate that kind of leadership is DJ Richardson. I think he is a much more natural leader than Dimitri is. And I think he's got some toughness to him. And I think he's deferred, as many freshmen do. I mean, that's kind of a delicate balance there when you're a freshman and you don't want to step on toes. You're trying to fit in. You're trying to, you know.
It might have cost us the Minnesota game. If Paul catches that ball with 7 seconds left, and next year he's not going to give it to Jordan. He's just going to take it, and he's going to go with it, and he's either going to create for himself or create for somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see that attitude you described from everyone that's back. I think I want to see people fight for it. I don't want to see anybody giving anything.
I've known Jeremy for a long time. I got to tell you this. Jeremy is not going to take any crap from anybody, and he is going to bring that attitude to their practices. Now, there's some other things about his attitude that I don't like, but he'll bring that toughness to practice at least.
Good. I hope that's exactly right. And I've seen Myers Leonard here a couple times recently, and I don't think he has that yet. And he's going to need, that's going to be something he's going to need to get. He's a little whiny. He's a little complaining about foul calls. But the thing about him is, just from a body standpoint, you can see him, and it doesn't take much imagination to imagine him putting on 20 pounds. He's got a better body for it, and my God, he's athletic for a big guy. There's just a lot of things he can do. The toughness of it, which he just doesn't, you know, you got to remember, and this is one of the dangers probably of taking a small school kid, but he just doesn't see it. He doesn't have big guys go against him. He, St. Teresa in the super sectional game I went over and saw, they had a kid 6'1 on him who was a little tough bulldog kid who just punched him in the kidneys and, you know, I mean, just put his knee in his butt and all that kind of stuff and just drove him nuts, threw him down on the court and in the corner. Well, the good news is, Myers Leonard jumped up and he was mad. And all of a sudden he started posting up like it was the seventh game of the NBA Finals. I mean, it was like, oh my God, who woke this kid up? And so you saw that he had it. There's a fire in him, if you can trigger that. And I was writing about this last week. Bruce has got to figure out a way with him to get him to play with that kind of, you know, passion and urgency all the time, because that kid has really got a bunch of skill if they can. And he has to play next year.
We have a buddy who's a business partner of mine who's on the board of Hales Franciscan, was sitting courtside. He called me the day after the game, and he said Myers has got some nasty, that he saw him swinging some elbows and pushing some kids back, and that when they were triple-teaming him, you know, he was getting after it and fighting back and pushing back.
But much of it didn't happen until he got annoyed, and then all of a sudden he did. And you know, also another thing with him, their strategy was not to try to post him down low all the time, because St. Teresa was showing so much attention to him. He would move off to the side, they'd wander over with him, and then the Robinson guards would drive right at the basket, and it worked. And they won by 21 that night, and ended up winning the state championship. So, you know, there's some good things there. But all those kids, when they get in as freshmen, much better off if the atmosphere is one of, you're going to have to fight for anything you want because we're not giving you anything.
Well, we need to break for a minute or two here, Tupps. Can you stay with us?
I'll hang in there.
Thanks. We're going to come right back with Mark Tupper after these words from our sponsors.
You will find the car you want at RizzaCars.com. Over 6,000 new and used cars, trucks, and vans are available online 24/7. RizzaCars.com is your one-stop auto purchase resource site. Build a new vehicle. Compare up to 5 vehicles at once. Access new vehicle reviews. Take a new car video test drive. RizzaCars.com also offers easy-to-qualify online financing. Why drive from dealer to dealer? Just remember,
you'll find the car you want at RizzaCars.com.
Someday you may wake up and think, I'm running out of time to do something about retirement. AXA Advisors can help you do something now that may provide a solid future for you and your family. AXA, Financial Protection. For more information, call Stephen King, Financial Consultant, 224-554-8053. That's 224-554-8053. Securities and investment advisory services offered through AXA Advisors, LLC, 212-314-4600. Member FINRA, SIPC.
Right, are we ready?
Yeah!
The real reason for the invention of the Internet. TalkZone.com. You're Talking Illini on Talk Zone. Now back to Boz and Mr. G.
Boz and Mr. G back talking Illini with a good friend, Mark Tupper. Tups, you know, I saw some things over the weekend in Indianapolis, I'm sure you did too, that, you know, kind of wondered where's this been all year. You know, do you think Bruce learned a few things the last week or so of the season that he'll kind of stick with and implement, you know, moving forward? For example, you know, the Wisconsin game, I was thrilled. We came out right away picking them up as they crossed the center line, you know, bugging their guards. Davis was working his tail off, not, you know, denying lure the ball. And you know, we said it a little earlier, it's maybe tough to do it for 30, 32 games, but, you know, this is the kind of play you need to play big time and to get to the top of the mountain, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, the very first thing I noticed was Mike Davis's defense on Lure. He just played him differently, and he played him like every play mattered.
Yeah.
And he does not always do that, and I thought that's a great sign. You know, he really made Lure work for whatever he could get. I was encouraged right from the start because I saw Mike Davis, you know, buying in defensively like he was. And, you know, I think, though, it's still going to come down to, you know, whether you execute or not, what is the mindset of this? This team's mindset has to be more, I'm going to keep using the word urgent, but more urgent. It has to be tougher than it, and it has to be that way day in and day out than it has been. Now, Bruce seemed to think that he, you know, struck on something last week when he ratcheted up the intensity of practice and all, and maybe that did. And if that's the magic, then great, you know. But that seems too simple to me, and that there might be more to it than that as they dig through this. But somehow, across the board, and I guess you have to hold everyone accountable, the coaches and the players, this has to matter more to them. It has to be embarrassing not to get in the tournament. It has to be embarrassing to have won one tournament game since the Final Four. I mean, that has to really, really personally bother people. And I don't even know if the players realize this, but the way this team is, this team has not made any friends this season with the fans. And they did make friends over the weekend. When they walked off the floor at Indianapolis, those Illini fans stood and clapped for them. They appreciated the way that they played. If they can do that through the NIT, I think they can win back a little bit of trust that they're on the right track. But I don't think two games at Indy and then a flop in the NIT is going to do it.
No.
What's the starting lineup next year if everyone comes back? Your prediction. I mean, you don't know with certainty.
I hope we don't know because I hope just what you said. I hope it's let's find out who wants it bad enough. I don't care who it is. Let's get the five guys that are going to play the hardest out there and assume that now they've at least assembled a reasonable amount of skill. And I want the five toughest, hardest playing guys that'll go. And if that's Tisdale and Davis, that's great. But if it's not, then bring on the next wave. If it's Richmond, fine. Let's play him. You know, I'm not writing off anything. I want to see, I mean, I realize there's some skill involved too, but I mean, I want to see attitude is the thing. I think that's the buzzword for me right now as we move forward.
Yeah, at the beginning of the season, Bruce made a point to state that, you know, one of the areas he needed to improve on was maybe substitution patterns and getting guys more time playing a few more guys. But, you know, I'd give him a generous C-minus for that, maybe even a D+. And, you know, with the new talent coming in, you know, this is something he's got to, you know, whether it's old school or not, you know, he's either got to change or let. I've seen teams operate where an assistant coach just handles the subs because, you know, he's up coaching the game every play and whatnot. But if this team wants to play with the urgency and the toughness that we saw, you know, over the weekend in Indianapolis, you know, let guys go hard for 4 or 5 minutes and then bring in 2-3 other guys. And you know, to me, that's a formula that could work, but Bruce might need a little help executing that.
Well, one thing that's always hard to factor in because you don't see it is a lot of coaches make decisions about who they're going to play in games based on how hard they played in practice. And you may find, may say to yourself, well, why didn't so-and-so get in the game? And if you were at practice, you'd maybe know the answer. And so I think that factors in a little bit, too. I guess I would ask you the question, who, other than Griffey, who did you not see as much of as you hoped to during the course of the season?
Well, no, you're right on that. What we thought, where we had some depth, and, you know, maybe the wild card here, nobody knows, you know, you don't know what you missed till you don't have it, was Bertrand. You know, we like to think he might have brought a little more to the table than Jordan, but, you know, looking ahead to next year with you got, you know, I expect Richmond and Myers-Leonard to see significant time. And
I would have liked to seen Brandon Paul get more minutes the second half of the year, too. I think, you know, Bruce was hard on him, and deservedly so. He didn't really progress the way we wanted him to, but, you know, you had to learn by trial of fire as well.
Yeah, I think he's got to be on the floor. I mean, he's just too good of an athlete. He's got to figure out what you can and can't do in terms of driving the ball to the basket.
Right.
Well, he's just got to keep his head up and be ready to make a play on the fly with the game
exactly
moving
right.
fast.
Well, that's exactly right.
So I've got a question for both of you. Here's the question. Would Bruce Weber have ever allowed Evan Turner to stay in a game while he was making 10 turnovers?
Well, let me ask this question. If I'm understanding Boz right, he's being a little critical about the fact that he would like to have seen Bruce play more guys and distribute the playing time a little better. How about what Thad Mata did? 5 guys are going to play, and he'll maybe 6. If Madsen gets in the game, he ain't playing anybody other than those.
Well, but I don't know that
he played Hill a little.
I don't know that the depth or the guys that Mata has on the bench are going to be guys like Nick. You know, say for example, we have the same starting 5 next year. You know, mm-hmm. your bench is going to be, you know, Leonard and Griffey and Paul and then you got the freshman. You got to get all those kids. And Bertrand.
Why do you assume that Paul's not going to be a starter?
Well, I'm just saying, for example, okay, so flip-flop Paul and Cole, whatever. But you're going to have guys like Bertrand and Crandall Head and Jeremy Richmond and Myers Leonard who, you know, you need to get in there and have them contribute, I would think. And especially, you know, we had a brief conversation before we went on, and I'm just this way looking far in advance. But, you know, the year after next, you know, we're back to 3 juniors again that have played a lot, which would be, you know, Brandon Paul and DJ and
Bertrand
and Griffey.
Bertrand will be a junior at that point.
All the guys that are, you know, the 3 freshmen in Bertrand next year with only 1 year in their belt. So next year is kind of critical to get those guys some significant minutes, I think.
I think that's right. I agree with you.
But it's still a question, still stands. Would Bruce have allowed a player to commit 10 turnovers in a game? Now, granted, McKamey has had 6 on 2 occasions this year.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if that player was scoring 31 or whatever he went, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think in the course of watching Evan Turner play over the season, you would probably give him almost all the rope you could feed to him, would you not? I mean, Bruce do that? Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
he did let Darren commit 7 turnovers or 8 turnovers, I think, against Arizona in the Elite Eight game in 2005 and didn't yank Darren, thank God. So I guess maybe the answer to that question is yes.
It was a quiet 10 turnover.
Well, and Darren had 8, I think, in that game. But I guess in that answers my question. If a guy was doing enough other things right and was talented enough and he had confidence enough in him based on his body of work during the year, maybe he does let that happen.
And I think there's some players you have a feeling about. You know, Bruce had a great feeling about Darren Williams. He believed Darren Williams was needed on the floor at all times, that his toughness, that his leadership, that his defense, that his passing, that his guts, that all that stuff was what you would put up with any mistake he would make in order to continue to have that out there. I don't think he has that same belief in any current player.
How vulnerable is Ohio State? Boz was asking this question before we went on before. You know, my contention is Ohio State has basically a stiff in the middle in Lauderdale offensively. The guy does not have a very strong skill set. And they really have no back-to-the-basket presence, but they've got four guys who can score in various ways. Is this going to be an Achilles heel for Ohio State, or can a team survive, and this is in contradiction to Boz's fears about not having bigs who can play back-to-the-basket, can a team survive without that kind of scoring threat inside?
I think they can, because, first of all, that's the one position where they have a player of depth. They actually have two guys who do play at that position. And although neither one of them is a back-to-the-basket guy, I understand that. And Lauderdale's biggest liability is going to be late in the game. You cannot have him on the floor because
you cannot
have him go to the free throw line. But I think they can. I think their biggest worry is what if a referee decides he doesn't like Evan Turner putting his head down and charging at the basket.
Or carrying the ball,
and then complaining when it happens. I mean, as was said at the at courtside when I was there the other day, I thought my first wife was a whiny little bitch.
Yeah, you know, as the season went on, you know, I love him, I love his game, but his attitude kind of wore on me as the season went on. A couple more minutes we have left, Tups. You know, this is a tough one, but you know, I like to make lemonade out of lemons, and as we said, I would like to think that the staff and the
team... By the way, I like to put vodka in my lemonade.
And yeah, he might have done that a few minutes ago. But anyway, you know, I would like to think that this team will come out tomorrow night with a chip on its shoulder and plow through this tournament the way, you know, and at least play with the urgency and toughness, aggressiveness that they did in Indianapolis and get to Madison Square Garden and, you know, just for themselves. Because the same guys, Les Keller, are coming back and, you know, they need some sort of confidence boost. And I think the extra week, 10 days or so playing together and playing a few more games can't be anything but good if they take the right approach.
I agree with you. I don't see any point in the, if you don't want to play, just turn down the bid.
Yeah.
But as long as you're in the thing, make something good out of it. And among the things that I would think of, but I don't know that the players understand, is I would try to alter slightly the fan perception of this group by giving them, you already gave them two games, give them three, four, five more in a row of a team that seems to have figured out how to play a certain, you know, a way that fans appreciate. But, you know, even if you lose in Madison Square Garden to some team that plays great and has a great shooting night, okay, so be it. But play like it matters. Play like it's all out there. I mean, just play like that. I mean, gee whiz, that's what's going to have to happen next year. There's a lot of good teams going to be back in the Big Ten next year. You're not going to be given anything next year.
Right, and I believe they have a tough schedule at the beginning of next year with the preseason NIT, and they'll be at the Garden against some tough teams.
That's exactly right. I mean, they'll be right back at the Garden. I know Pittsburgh's in that tournament. I think Texas is in that tournament.
It's not Utah and Bradley, that's for sure.
It's not Utah and Bradley.
By the way, Utah and Bradley, historically, are two of the top 20 winning programs of all time. You know, they do have some pedigree and some history. An interesting factoid, Tups, do you know that 17 out of the top 31 all-time wins teams did not make this year's tournament?
Well, I know that if you look at the NIT field, there's at least four teams in there that have won the national championship or played for it just in the last couple of years.
Right. 17 out of the 31 top winning teams in NCAA basketball history did not make the NCAA tournament.
Well, there you go. And I heard, I saw the article with Roy Williams the other day. Maybe you saw it when he was talking about North Carolina's very disappointing season. And he said, I could not find the right buttons to push this season. So it does happen where guys get, and I know North Carolina, I know they lost a lot of players, but I also know they've got great talent. in that program. They just could not figure out a way to get that thing rolling the way that they want to. And I'm looking at Cincinnati. There's another one. And I'm looking at Memphis. And I'm looking at, you know,
UConn.
Connecticut. I mean, yes, exactly. It's
UCLA.
And, but you know what?
Well, they're
that's
in
their
there.
Problem. I don't
they're
want
not
to have
the
that
NIT,
problem
no.
every year.
You know, yeah, and by the way, when you win two national championships in 4 years, you get a pass.
You do. I agree.
Weber does not get a pass. Is he in any danger?
No, because, well, first of all, he's done a pretty good job. And second of all, anytime you talk about a coach and his situation, you have to talk about his boss and who does the hiring and firing. And you were talking about a boss that didn't fire Ron Zook. Bruce Weber's very safe.
Well, and I think, again, you know, I want to see this staff be able to coach these, you know, this year's class and next year's class, where they've supposedly made these changes in recruiting philosophy, getting, you know, different types of players than the Coles and Tisdales. They get, in my book, they get a shot at coaching these players up and seeing what they could do with
them. If somebody would have told you guys that we would have missed the tournament 2 out of 3 years at the end of 2006, they would have told you that going forward, what would you have said to them?
I would have been very surprised. I mean, let's face it, we all thought they would parlay 2005 into much greater recruiting success than they had, and that's very disappointing, and it's part of the reason they're in this position, and now they appear to have gotten that figured out, at least to some degree, and that probably swings the, you know, the pendulum back over to the coaching staff now to start to deliver better performances on the court. I think next year, you know, I say Bruce is not in any trouble, and I don't think he's not. But next year, if we're sitting here talking about who they're playing in the first round of the NIT, you know, the drumbeat will be a lot louder and a lot different. And I'm certainly hopeful that doesn't happen. I want to, you know, I know I like to cover the NCAA tournament, but I know how fans get excited about it. It's a whole different matter. And I'd like to see this team get to the second weekend of the tournament, at least.
Was this a self-fulfilling prophecy after 2005 when we had some recruiting missteps and Bruce said, well, it takes 2 to 3 years to really see the benefits from a Final Four run like we had? You know, it spoke about our program like we were on the upswing trying to get somewhere as opposed to have had a great run over a 5-6 year period and trying to maintain that great run.
Yeah, it's, you know, I know you guys have gone through and listed every player, I'm sure, been talked about them, but there were just too many misses there and too many times they settled on people, you know, I mean, Chester Frazier, you know, I wish they had a tough kid like Chester Frazier, but Chester Frazier was a guy they settled on that just didn't have the skill level, and even to some degree, Mike Davis and Mike Tisdale, in that wave there,
right,
where you're trying to scramble to find guys and so forth. And really, they got pretty lucky, I think, with Mike Davis in particular to have yanked him out of the late date. I mean, he's a really athletic kid, unlike anyone they have. And at times he's another hard guy to figure. At times he makes me believe he gets it. And then until the next game when he doesn't.
We all need therapy, Tops. Thanks for joining us today.
All right, guys. Good to talk to you.
Talk to you soon, Tops. Thanks.
You can reach us at 888-463-6748 or email us at talkingalina@yahoo.com. We'll be back with Brad Sturdy after these words from our sponsors.
You'll find the car you want at RizzaCars.com.
It's true. You will find the car you want at RizzaCars.com. Over 6,000 new and used cars, trucks, and vans available online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's so fast and so easy. RizzaCars.com is your one-stop auto purchase resource site. Build a new vehicle. Compare up to 5 vehicles at once. Access new vehicle reviews. Take a new car video test drive. RizzaCars.com also offers easy-to-qualify online financing, which helps to make your purchase simple and fast. Shop 13 new car franchises, including Ford, Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, Lincoln, Mercury, Acura, Porsche, Kia, Hummer, and Saab. So if you're tired and frustrated of driving from dealer to dealer, just remember,
you'll find the car you want at RizzaCars.com. RizzaCars.com.
The award-winning Sun Tracker Swivel Beach Chair is the only folding beach chair that swivels a complete 360 degrees. So whether you're basking in the sun or just watching the kids, you'll never need to get up to adjust to the optimal position. It's lightweight and folds to only 6 inches wide, so it's perfect for the beach, tailgate parties, sporting events, and more. Anywhere you take a folding chair, you'll want to take the Sun Tracker. To learn more or to order yours today, visit suntracker.com. Or call 888-786-8725. Sun Tracker, the ultimate swivel beach chair. A proud sponsor of Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G. Check it out at suntracker.com.
Chicago Athletic Club is the number one athletic club chain in Chicagoland, according to the Chicago Tribune. For membership info, visit their Lincoln Park, Lakeview, Evanston, or West Loop locations. Or call Pat Cunningham at 773-529-2024. Tell him Boz and Mr. G sent you and receive 1 month absolutely free. That's 773-529-2024. Chicago Athletic Clubs, another great Illini sports experience.